Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impulga in Washington.
She was another wonderful human being, a lady of grace, a lady of class in the positive sense.
Across the globe, the death of Queen Elizabeth II prompts reflections on her reign and how she succeeded in presiding over the end of Britain's colonial empire and embracing the independence of her former dominions.
The defamation of the president as a law is very backwards and very unnecessary in a democratic country.
Zambian race groups urge the government to make good on a vow to repeal a defamation law they say is being used to silence critics of President Hakainde Hichilema.
Unless we agree to put loss and damage finance on the agenda, we will not be able to have a substantive discussion on how to help people who are suffering from floods, cyclones, and drought right now.
And hundreds of environmental groups call for the issue of loss and damage finance to be on the formal agenda of the upcoming COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Prince Charles, the oldest person to ever assume the British throne, became King Charles III on Thursday following the death of his mother, Queen Elizabeth II. No date has been set for his coronation. Across the globe, the death of Queen Elizabeth II has prompted reflections on the history sweep of her reign and how she succeeded in presiding over the end of Britain's colonial empire and embracing the independence of her former dominions. Earlier, I reached Dr. Munini Mlera, the physician and political commentator, for his take on the death of the long-serving queen.
She was another wonderful human being, a lady of grace, a lady of class in the positive sense, who really, if anyone deserved the title Majesty, she did. Because of the way she carried herself, the way she was able to be the head of England and yet never involved herself in any controversies, and therefore, at least I cannot tell you which side of the British political divide she leaned to. That's how good and effective she was in being a neutral head of state of the United Kingdom. Of course, you can imagine being queen with 15 prime ministers, 70 years as queen, in a country that has been at wars, a country that was transitioning from a colonial, a great empire, to one that was ceding control of many of its colonies. And yet she was able to maintain a good relationship with the ex-colonies through the Commonwealth. All in all, a great queen.
Talking of colonies, what do you make of the fact that Britain lost most of her colonies during her reign?
I think it was really not something that had anything to do with the Queen Elizabeth II, but rather it was coincidental. Whoever would have been a queen or king would have faced the same, because the Second World War cost the United Kingdom a lot in terms of money. It was a very, very expensive war. And maintaining the colonies was not longer tenable. Along with that was the restlessness in places, of course, like India had they became independent. I think it was 1947, immediately after the war. You had the countries like Ghana and Nigeria that were agitating, and you had the Mau Mau rebellion in Kenya, and so on. And so really the writing was on the wall that change had to come. And she, I think, supervised it very well.
Talking of her character, given Britain's hybrid sort of governance where the Queen is there, they have a Prime Minister, and she managed to remain impartial, as you mentioned earlier. That must have taken a lot of, should we say, tact?
Very much so. Now, I understand that her father, King George VI, had a similar approach, and that he had tutored her very well and prepared her for that role where you are queen of everyone, in that you therefore offer your good listening ear, you observe, but you do not express your views except to support whichever government is in power and to support the democratic process. And I think it's a remarkable achievement that the Queen herself was not a democrat in a sense, because by definition, a monarch cannot be a democrat. And yet she presided over one of the most successful democracies, and indeed presided over a country that was pushing for democratization in its former colonies. To the extent that they have tried. She is a woman whose character to me represents what is good. And that's my memory, and that's what I think it's going to be. By the way, Douglas, I'll tell you on a personal note, my mother tells me I was born the year the Queen came to Uganda to open the Owen Falls Dam. And so to me, I see that this lady has been pretty much around all my life, literally. And she has seen many kings, many queens lose their thrones, and some of them through violent revolutions. And she has seen England go through restless political periods. I remember the turmoil of the 1970s and the early 80s in England because of labor strife and so on, and yet she has always risen above all that and has enjoyed the adoration of Britons on the left, on the right, in the middle, and she has enjoyed the adoration and reverence by people like me who is not even born in a monarchical society, but really see the value that that woman has offered Britain and offered the Commonwealth, and I think offered us as people as an example of a person with civility, that which really we should all wish that our children be like, not as queens, but as people who live a dignified life and who do not seek trouble.
Dr. Munini Mulere, a physician and political commentator, spoke with me from Toronto, Canada. As you heard, Queen Elizabeth II long had a relationship with African nations. Over the next few days, we'll be speaking with people around the continent to hear their thoughts and memories about the world's longest-serving monarch. Tracy Wanjiru is an accountant in Nairobi.
She is the longest reigning monarch. I've known of her since the day I was born. She became the queen long before I was born. She has reigned for many years and she has maintained her role as a symbol of unity. We mourn her as a great monarch, a strong woman, and a leader who has seen many generations and who has mentored many.
Also in Nairobi, Kamis Malaya Suleiman is a member of the Nairobi Counter Assembly, representing the Kangemi ward.
Basing on back 1952, the Queen, upon the father's death, she was in Kenya at a place called Nyeri. And that's where she went back and she was coronated to be the Queen. So the history of Kenya and England in terms of the passing of the Queen is very saddening. And we as a people of Kenya, we send our condolences to the UK people we are together in mourning.
Alima Bawa is the co-founder of Cow Tribe Technology, based in Tamale in northern Ghana. Queen Elizabeth presented her with an award at Buckingham Palace when she participated in the Young Leaders Program.
Meeting her for just a brief moment was a lifetime experience that I would cherish for the rest of my life. It had not dawned on me that I needed to do something extraordinary until the sudden news of her death that suddenly awoken me to strengthen myself for bigger service ahead of me. Her values of service instilled in me through the mentorship during the Young Leaders Program continue to shape me daily. And as her legacy and leadership would continue to be a benchmark of inspiration for generations. But again, my fond memory of her is that calm composure and soft-spoken voice in which she spoke to me while presenting the award.
In the coming days, VOA will be bringing you updates on the plans, Queen Elizabeth's funeral, and deeper looks at her legacy over 70 years on the throne. Please check out voaafrica.com and voanews.com for more news to catch up with all your favorite VOA programs. Dozens of civilians were killed this week in a northern Malian town attacked by jihadists affiliated with the Islamic State group, a local elected official and the leader of an armed group told AFP on Friday. It was the first time the town of Talataye, about 150 kilometers or 90 miles from the city of Gao, has been attacked on such a scale by the Islamic State in the Greater Sahara ISGS. On Tuesday, the jihadists fought a fierce battle with rivals from the Al-Qaeda-affiliated support group for Islam and Muslims and other armed groups, including the Tuareg-dominated movement for the salvation of Azawadi. People familiar with the events told AFP. The ISGS fighters, who emerged from the bush on motorbikes, took control of the town Tuesday evening after more than 3 hours of fighting, AFP learned earlier this week. The situation on the ground remains unclear as information is difficult to come by in the dangerous and remote Sahel area, largely cut off from communication networks. The death toll also varies according to different accounts. A local official said that 45 civilians had been killed, while an MSA leader put the civilian death toll at 30. Both spoke to AFP on condition of anonymity and added that houses and the bucket had been torched. Zambian rights groups are calling on the government to make good on a vow to repeal a defamation law they say is being used to silence critics of President Hakainde Hichilema. The call comes after Zambian police arrested an opposition leader this month under the colonial-era law for insulting the president. Rights groups say in the past year, police have arrested 12 people for defaming the president, which can be punished with up to 3 years in prison. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
A Zambian court Tuesday charged the leader of the opposition Patriots for Economic Progress Party, Sean Tembo, with hate speech, which carries a punishment of a fine of up to $6,000 and 2 years in prison if he's found guilty. The charge followed Tembo's September 1 arrest after he posted online criticism of President Hakainde Hichilema's monthly fuel hikes, comparing them to menstruation. While the charge was reduced, Zambian rights groups note the arrest was the latest carried out under harsh colonial law against defaming the president. The 1965 law carries a punishment of up to 3 years in prison for insults against the president and has been used by past governments to silence critics. Campaigning for president in last year's elections, which he won, Hichilema promised to revoke the law. In the past year, though, rights groups say Zambian police arrested 12 people under the law, including members of opposition political parties. Two were released, six were jailed, and four, including Tembo, are awaiting trial. Chama Pilato Fumba is a popular musician and director of the group People's Action for Accountability and Good Governance in Zambia. He himself has been arrested several times for insulting Zambia's president.
The defamation of the president, as a law, is very backwards. and very unnecessary in a democratic country like ours. This law should be scrapped off our constitution, as it does not represent our interests and our aspirations as a country. It is a bad law that even good presidents can become bad presidents.
Hichilema's spokesman was quoted in Zambian media saying the president had nothing to do with opposition leader Tembo's arrest. Cornelius Mwetwa is a lawyer and a spokesman for the ruling United Party for National Development. He says Zambia's opposition is being petty in complaining about the law.
It has nothing to do with restriction of the freedom of speech, because this is not a law promulgated and enacted under the new Donor administration. It is a law that has always been in force, but one where now the opposition want to take advantage of, to be insulting the president when they are arrested, so that then they can say no change has occasioned to the country. Deep down their hearts, they know that this is a different Zambia. This is a Zambia that the people, you know, wanted and voted for.
Mwetwa would not say whether the government plans to amend the controversial law. McDonald Chipenzi is director of Zambian Rights Group, Governance, Elections, Advocacy and Research Services. He says the government will continue to abuse the defamation law if there are no campaigns to end it.
So the only thing that is required now is to call for the immediate review or reform of this law so that it's not infringing on the freedom of the people, and also try to bring in the aspect of civic education on the responsibility of citizens as they express themselves, as they enjoy this freedom.
Amnesty International Secretary General Agnes Kalamad met with Hichilema in Zambia in March and repeated their position that the law should be repealed, citing its past use against critics, opposition and journalists. The president said his government was committed to upholding human rights, liberties and freedoms, but would maintain strict adherence to the rule of law. The Zambian court has not yet set a date for Tembo's trial. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
South African opposition parties on Friday marched to the Public Protector's Office in Pretoria to demand the release of findings on investigations against President Cyril Ramaphosa. Ramaphosa is being investigated after millions of dollars were allegedly illegally kept at his farm, stolen by robbers who were caught, tortured, and paid to stay silent. The parties are accusing the public protector of shielding Ramaphosa after failing to release the report 90 days after a complaint was filed. Thuso Kumalo reports from Pretoria.
Who left? Who right? Aye. Come on, sir. Aye. Aye. Who left? He's tough. Aye. Kill him, man. Aye.
Aye. Hundreds of opposition parties, supporters and their leaders gathered in front of the public protector's office in Pretoria, accusing her of refusing to hold Ramaphosa to account. The office started investigating a complaint against President Ramaphosa 3 months ago, after allegedly keeping up to $4 million in undeclared foreign currency at his private farm. The parties have already announced their intention to impeach Ramaphosa over the issue, and they want the report to back up their case. In his address at the gathering, Julius Malema, leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, criticized the acting public protector, Kolega Ngacega, for failing to release her preliminary report in 30 days as prescribed.
You have violated the law, and you know that very well. The report must be released with immediate effect.
Temba Godi is the leader of the African People's Convention Party. He said any delay in releasing the report was favoring Ramaphosa, arguing that he has no explanation as to why such an amount of money was kept at his house, not the bank.
He has been caught in a lie and is trying to concoct a big, fat lie.
However, Ngaceka defended the delay, saying her office wants to produce a thoroughly researched report that will withstand any legal challenge.
There is no political undue influence on this office. This office needs to do its work independently, without any fear, without any favor, and without any prejudice.
The scandal continues to place Ramaphosa's future on shaky ground ahead of his ruling African National Congress elective conference in December this year. The failing economy, growing unemployment, rise in crime, and electricity shortages have all created more enemies than friends for him. Ramaphosa has already told the nation that the money was from the sale of game and cattle at his private farm. He told parliamentarians last week that he will not give further explanation on the matter since it was now being investigated by the police. Parliament is in the process of setting up a panel of experts expected to investigate the issue, something already being done by the Public Protector's Office and the police. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Hundreds of environmental groups on Wednesday called for the issue of loss and damage finance to be on the formal agenda of the upcoming COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt. Developing nations have for years called for funding from rich nations, the biggest polluters, to help poor countries reduce emissions while growing their economies. Climate Action Network International initiated the letter to UN heads of delegations. Harjit Singh, head of Global Public Strategy for the Climate Action Network, argues historical polluters have a moral obligation to pay for loss and damage in places like the Horn of Africa, where the impacts of climate change are already being felt.
Unless we agree to put loss and damage finance on the agenda, we will not be able to have a substantive discussion on how to help people who are suffering from floods, cyclones, and drought right now. So it's really important for us to make sure that heads of delegations who are meeting in Cairo put loss and damage finance on the official agenda and then have a substantive discussion for a meaningful outcome.
Why is including loss and damage finance so important for some of these countries?
We have seen how devastating climate impacts are happening around the world, and particularly developing countries who are least responsible for the crisis but are facing some of the worst disasters, as we saw in Pakistan. And we do not have any system in place right now that deals with the issue of loss and damage under UN climate change. So imagine we are living in a world where 90% of disasters are climate-related, but not a single penny has been provided by the UN climate change system to help these people recover from climate impacts.
I think what you're saying is if there isn't any loss and damage financing attached to this, what does it really matter?
Exactly. You know, when we talk about the UN climate change or Paris Agreement that we got, the purpose of Paris Agreement is not just to talk about solar panels and wind turbines. The goal is to keep people and planet safe. And if people are suffering right now, and if this system doesn't respond and help people recover from these impacts, then there's a big question mark on the system itself. And we know how many rich countries do not want this UN climate change system to function and help people.
Can you talk a little bit about how climate change negatively impacts the Horn of Africa in particular, and what specific types of climate change are going on there, and how is it affecting the people?
Basically, climate disasters are intensifying in the Eastern Horn of Africa and many other parts of the world. They did not get sufficient support to prepare for these climate impacts. So we see livestock being dead and people do not have sufficient access to food. And that is a major issue that Africa is facing, and there is no support coming from the international system.
In the last round of talks in July, the summary of the co-chairs noted that overall parties viewed loss and damage would be one of the defining characteristics of success of COP27. And yet, it's not in there yet in black and white. How optimistic are you that it's going to, some version of it is going to be in there?
So loss and damage was not even on the agenda of COP26 that happened in Glasgow last year. And it was a push from civil society. And as Climate Action Network, we made that as a major issue and what we called it as a litmus test for the success of COP26. And we are saying the same thing for COP27. And this time, we see many developing country parties have also said the same thing, that COP27 must be a defining moment to help people recover from climate impacts by setting up a system for loss and damage finance.
Which countries would you say are most resistant to this loss and damage finance?
So the United States has been a historical blocker, supported by the European Union, and countries like Norway, Switzerland have taken a tough stand, and they don't even want to discuss the issue of loss and damage finance substantively, and that has caused a major issue.
That was Harjeet Singh, head of global public strategy for the Climate Action Network International, speaking to my colleague Caravan Dam from New Delhi, India. You're listening to Netland Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Netland Africa, the Saturday Music Report from our collection of music from the continent. All right, now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Surrender, surrender to you. flower like the noya. And I feel like to give you. If you give me something, I go like Coletto. I feel like Coletto in the night. I need that. Like bamboo, you. How much you make me love, so you. Make me love, so you. Your love is so phenomenal. Whenever you need. I'm
You know, pick you, my vibe. rata kankani o thatile la ke sena kanjani ke go rata maloba le maopane as bonono saka my love my smile keeper ane le rato ele cold drink when I utulita ene mina ngiyokuthanduso ka wena ke kwala score anga wina lotho nga o regela posh you got too much
She got it in where they make a man see. And I know they lead, she know they lead. and she dey call me Mr. Romantic. Yeah. And for the heart she dey bend and I leave. For the love in a day she never see. Yeah. I be to love you tonight, or have you love you for life? But she dey turn on my mind. She say she dey for only me, oh. She say she like Dojo Rovio. She say she don't want no man, no. For me, so I dey give her what she say. I go take, I go take, take, oh yeah, don't yank me, take, go take, in a go take, 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 don't yank me, take, la rote, till I go take, take, oh yeah, go yank me, take, I go take, she don't dey pay, take, oh yeah, take, la rote.
Yeah.
was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline Africa team. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.